You please join me in opening prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus
Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles,
and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Amen.
Those of you who have not received one, this put Mother Truly Universal out for her Mahasamadhi. And a wonderful letter of March written to the group about their trip together to Montreal in 1967 for the World's Fair. And Marge is just simply aflame with God and Guru, and it shows through every word that she writes and as she sees all these experiences. And then also there's some letters, a play that involved Marge when she wrote to somebody from the organization in which she said Mother was her Guru. And the individual took exception to that and stating what has been said, that Master was the last guru, although I've never seen any direct reference to anything that he wrote or said in which he absolutely stated so. In such an important teaching, you would think that he would make a point of either putting something in writing or saying something in public. Mother oftentimes said that Master spoke in parable. There have been some disciples who have followed afterwards and taken his words quite literally in all cases. And why do Masters do this? It is because their message is tailored for each individual. As Mother oftentimes said, what she said to one individual may be very different than what she says to another, because it's meant for that individual, exactly where they're at in their evolution and at their time. I remember a time when there were those who were going through spiritual experiences, and they were feeling at the time that this world was coming to an end. And Mother could echo such sentiments and feelings in her own words. And yet I felt at the time and continue to feel that she was reflecting that individual, or perhaps there are several, who are going through these experiences. And when you do, you can feel that this world is coming to a cataclysm and to an absolute end. Because that is what is happening within your own consciousness. Worldly consciousness is going through a cataclysm. Worldly consciousness is coming to an end. And so you project that outwards onto this world. Now, this world may go through various kinds of cataclysms. It may go through various kinds of ends. But until all humanity has come to the point of being absolutely good or absolutely evil, this world will continue on its way because it serves a purpose. It is the ground upon which all souls who are attached to this earth and have experience of this material plane must come in order to work out their karma. We tend to come in groups. We tend to come together because we're tied together by a common past or patterns of a past. And it is only through coming together that we can work those things out. The key is not to become embroiled into more materialism, into more of the drama of this world, but to free ourselves from it. And as devotees, as aspirants for truth and realization, we must come to that point where we are no longer drawn into this world in the same old way. Reading from this last Cross and Lotus journal, Mother's Talk, as from Christmas time. Man writes his own destiny. It's the most tremendous experience that man can have, and yet he settles for peanuts. He settles for the ashes of things that he indulges in the world of the senses. He has not lifted his consciousness to God. He has not purified himself. He gives God the residue of everything in his life. And then he lifts his eyes and he cries out to God, and he wonders, why don't things go well for him? Why is God not giving him this? Why is God not doing this for him? On the other hand, why is he being punished? He does not realize that he has written his own destiny upon his own forehead with his own hand, and he has put the law into action. Nobody has done it for him. He has done it through the misuse of his own free will. But this all can be changed if you will, like Paul, turn your face towards Christ and let his light shine on you. If you will be willing to walk behind him and let him walk in front of you, lighting your way, if you find that a whole new life will change for you, that everything in your life will take on a brighter hue. Thank you. So many years ago, Master wrote a little booklet called The Law of Success. And reading from it, Power of Divine Will. Divine will has no boundaries. It works through laws known and unknown, natural and seemingly miraculous. It can change the course of destiny, wake the dead, cast mountains into the sea, and create new solar systems. Man, as an image of God, possesses with him the all-accomplishing power of will. To discover through right meditation how to be in harmony with divine will is man's highest obligation. When guided by error, human will misleads us. But when guided by wisdom, human will is attuned to divine will. God's plan for us often becomes obscured by the conflicts of human life, and so we lose the inner guidance that would save us from chasms of misery. When man attunes his will with God's will, which is guided by wisdom, he is using divine will. Through the use of right techniques of meditation, developed anciently by India sages, all men may achieve perfect harmony with the will of the Heavenly Father. Just as all power lies in his will, so all spiritual and material gifts flow from his boundless abundance. In order to receive his gifts, you must eradicate from your mind all thoughts of limitation and poverty. Universal mind is perfect and knows no lack. To reach that never-failing supply, you must maintain a consciousness of abundance. Even when you do not know where the next dollar is coming from, you should refuse to be apprehensive. When you do your part and rely on God to do his, you will find that mysterious forces come to your aid and that your constructive wishes soon materialize. When you do your part and rely on God to do his, you will find that mysterious forces come to your aid and that your constructive wishes soon materialize. This confidence and consciousness of abundance are attained through meditation. These are wonderful words and the absolute truth. I've demonstrated it in my own life, in that there was a time when I had all the things of this world that this world normally says makes for an abundant life, a home, cars, and a bank account, and so on. And one by one, God stripped all of these things away from me. He did it with a great purpose. As he did so, I noticed that there were certain things, and some of them surprised me, that I had in this life that represented attachments. I realized that there are so many things that acted as, you might say, a navigation system does for a jetliner or something that's navigating its way through space. You can have radar or you can have sonar, if it's water, that bounces sound off of different objects. And depending on the speed that it returns, you can identify what that object is that you're approaching. In a similar way, we have material things in our life, and we bounce our thoughts off of them. We check over here and over there to make sure that they're still in place. If it's a home, if it's material objects, even sacred objects in our life. Anything on the outside, we bounce out a thought wave, and as a result, we say, all right, I'm okay, or if there's no response, I'm not okay. If the bank account reads zero, if there are things that have been stolen or lost or anything that somehow has disappeared out of our life, we feel disturbed by that. We feel as if we're not complete if we don't have those things in our life. All of these things were stripped away from me, and so those normal kind of soundings that would be taken and would bounce back to me were no longer there. And I had to become complete within myself. I had to know that everything that I had was within me, and that anything that was outside of me could be and was taken away from me. I suppose the pinnacle of this came when I went to Cloud Mountain for a year of silence and solitude. And it's true, I took a few books and I took a few pieces of furniture with me, but it was stripped down to things that were fairly minimal. Everything else was given away and put away. And so there I was, just with myself, and I realized that even going to the store, just going out and doing things in this world, represented an outer reference for me. And so I no longer did those things. I had no plans. That's another reference. What am I going to do in the future? I knew only that I would be where I was and nothing else. And so everything was stripped away. I had my meditation chair in which I sat, and my mind dwelt on the things of activities, and had been a very active life before going in. And gradually things began to settle down. And I just felt within myself a growing inner stillness, a ground, you might say, that's within me. When Peter said to Jesus in response to his question of who do they say I am, and he said, I know that you are the Christ. You are the Messiah. You are the one who has come to bring the light into this world. And Jesus recognized in the way that Peter said it to him that it was not just an opinion. It was just not something that he heard. It came from an inner revelation. This is how it happens. When you get something directly from God, it carries power with it. It carries truth with it. It carries light with it. And if you are one who has attuned your mind to such things, you recognize that in another person. That is why when Jesus spoke from this great mountain within himself, and he had gone to the top of that mountain, he had realized God within himself. And as a result of realizing God within, he knew the truth, not out of ego. It's not the ego gets puffed up. It's really quite the opposite. You feel completely humbled when you enter into God's temple of truth. because it raises to the ground everything that you have thought, everything that you have believed. You realize how puny, how small human thought is in comparison with the tremendous things that God gives to you. And so Jesus was conveying these things. He is speaking them out. And he felt it as he spoke it out. He felt the power. He felt the upliftment. He felt the purity. He knew that it was the truth. And there were those who were listening. And he could pierce into their hearts. And he could see that they were petty. That they were concerned with their power in the world, with things of the world, with their position and looking good, that they dwelt in the level of the mind, that they had not yet ascended to that mountain. And many of these people were the priests. They are the ones who were supposed to be in charge of maintaining this truth. And not only had they not realized it themselves, but because of their pettiness, because of their ego, because they were wedded to the human mind, and they had not ascended to that heaven, they felt jealous of anyone who had, much less whether they could even recognize whether they had or not, because they didn't have it in themselves. And so when they questioned Jesus, when they challenged him, when they insulted him, he knew from which they spoke. And it was all pure human ego. And because he knew the truth within himself, he had full and complete confidence in it. And he knew that those who were sincere, those who really were on the path toward realization, would recognize that power. Have you ever thought about why did he go to the people he went to make as his close disciples? They were fishermen. Many of them were common, ordinary people. They were not the intelligentsia. They were not those who had gone up high in the material world, not at all. They were humble. And yet, there is something in them that reached out for the truth. They wanted the freedom and the spiritual consciousness that Jesus represented when he spoke to them, when he demonstrated the power of God within them. They recognized that this was something different. He taught in a way that none others taught. He didn't teach from rote. He didn't say things and just quote things because they were commonly known or that they were read about in the temple. Rather, he came as direct truth from God. And so as a result of that, they felt the difference in him. And Jesus even said at one point, "I thank you, Father, for not revealing this to the wise." In other words, those who are involved in things of the wisdom of the mind only and have not ascended up into that higher mountain. This requires great humility to go within yourself and to realize these great truths. And even as Jesus had done this, so had Master Paramahansa Yogananda, so had Mother, so had this guru lineage and other great spiritual saints and masters all over this world, down through time. And when any of them hears the words of a true master, when they hear words that are also charged with this power, even as their inner revelations have shown them, then they recognize that one as a man or a woman of God. And so when Papa, when Master read the words of Jesus, they recognize here is a man who knew God. When they read Krishna, when they read Buddha, they said, this is a man who knows God. Now Buddha, in his case, didn't use the terminology of God because he didn't want it to be confused with the myriad gods and goddesses that were part of Hinduism. He saw that as an obstruction because he was a great jnani, and jnanis don't utilize gods and goddesses or anything in between as stair steps towards the infinite, nor once do they reach the highest elements of creation do they look at these symbolic characters as anything of meaning because they want to go straight to the top. But for the bhakti, For that one who has love and aspiration for God, he's different. He utilizes the different gods, the different goddesses, the different images of God, and he sees in them, once he has attained as high as consciousness, that each one represent an aspect of God's consciousness and therefore can be useful. It's not a right or wrong kind of thing, only that all the masters, Papa and Master and Mother, all say that the Yoni is a very difficult way to go, because it strips everything away that is not God in order to reveal that which is. Whereas the Bhakti utilizes that which is given to him in order to focus his mind on something positive, something higher, something good. And as a result of that, his mind is drawn higher and higher and higher, and that ultimately he must go through the state of the Yoni. He must let go of everything that is material, everything that is of an image, everything that is outside of him. Now, from the beginning, I never thought of God as an individual or a being who was in some part of the cosmos and not in some other part of the cosmos. I always felt that he was the presence that I felt within myself, and I first felt that so terrifically in the presence of my guru, because when she spoke, I felt the power of God within her. I felt the power of God issue out through her words, and her words were impregnated with this tremendous power of God. And as a result of that, God inside of me was awakened. I felt everything that was not of God stripped away. And it was as if sitting out in the sun, sunbathing, stripped down to nothing, and just feeling the radiance, the light of God radiating from her. And I felt myself warmed. I felt myself illumined through the Spirit of God within her. And so this is the power of the Guru, and the Guru comes in order to awaken that God consciousness within us, not in order to make us slaves of that individual, not at all. The purpose is to awaken God inside of us so greatly that we are like an ember that is within a log that has been long water-soaked, but it gets a little purchase, it gets a little ability to be able to burn within that log, and as a result of that burning within the log, it begins to dry it out. I've seen logs that have been so wet, when you put them on the fire, out one end runs all of this water as it's being chased out by the fire. And it just literally runs out of one end. And if you leave it in long enough, that log will dry out and become dry tinder and become fuel for the fire. And that is the way it is with us, that as we remain in that fire of Guru's consciousness, and that fire burns within us, and it begins to make all the water leave us. So the water is ignorance. The water is delusion. The water is attachment to these things that have kept us bound to the human and blind to the divine. So this is the purpose for the Guru to come. And then that blaze gradually begins to build within us, and we feel ourselves catch fire with it. And what is this catching fire? It is really feeling the bliss, the upliftment, and the power of God within us. Too many times we have not really taken these truths and learned the basic ABC. Sometimes I tell God, Lord, you reveal these tremendous things within me. And it is true that many of them seem beyond words' capacity to be able to convey accurately their real meaning. But I say, why don't you speak of some of these things that you have shown me? It seems like you keep hammering away on some very basic truths. And he tells me that it is because these basic truths need to be incorporated in each person's life, to the point where when you drink a cup of tea, you do it in a brand new way. When you drive your car to work, you do it with a fully different different kind of consciousness. That ordinary things become transformed for you. That you no longer see things in an ordinary way, but you see it through divine vision. This is the flame of God within you that is transforming you and changing you in every minute detail. This has to happen in order for us to have full and complete realization of God. There cannot be any little area that we reserve for ourselves, that we think, well, this is for me and God doesn't belong here. If that's the case, then you have missed the point. I put out a posting recently on an interesting little book that I've been reading about tidying and organizing. And it's been a fascinating thing to go through. Some people have come into this world very tidy in their habits. I'm not one of them. I'm maybe not the worst, but I'm not the best either, and I've never been completely happy with where I've been. I have too many piles, I have too many things stacked up here and there. And so I realize it's both a skill set to learn, but it also represents things of the mind and things of the emotions, and that we hang on to things for the wrong reasons. And one of the eye-opening revelations that this author Marie Kondo gave for me is that when you go through things and you're sorting them, as we all have done, but she adds an additional ingredient and she says, hold each item individually and ask yourself, does this give me joy? Does this item give me joy? And if it comes up in your mind that it really doesn't, then you discard it immediately. Now, it can bring up, well, will I have anything left if I get rid of everything that doesn't give me joy? And that's a possibility, I suppose, but not likely. There will be things. And will I have enough? You see, there's all these attachments, and they are things that are on the outside of us that make us feel secure, that make us feel all right. I have been in some people's homes where literally newspapers and magazines and things are stacked from the floor to the ceiling. And it left a little path that you could make your way through. And I thought, this is like entering into somebody's fortress by going through a maze. And I think that that's the purpose. I think somewhere inside, this feels like safety. It's like building a cave around you. And it doesn't allow anything in. And we have these things around us in order to make us feel all right, to make us feel safe, to make us feel secure. I remember my grandmother who had gone through the Depression years, and she had all of these little tin plates stacked up from frozen food containers. Now, what she thought they might be useful for, I don't know. But she had whole stacks of these things. So it's interesting, what are those things that we accumulate? What are those things that we keep? Do we keep things as trophies? Do we keep things because they make us feel safe or secure? And so going through this process and letting go of everything, you handle it individually, one by one, asking, does this give me joy? And when we can answer yes and keep those things and discard everything else, what is the result? We are only surrounded by those things that give us joy. And isn't that a wonderful thing? And it opens up the energy field around you. You feel it. You feel lighter. You feel more open. You feel that the winds of heaven can blow through you and through the things that you have. And so this is the purpose. In order to tidy and organize our areas, to bring more joy, is to bring more openness, to bring more happiness into your life, and to be able to be more efficient, to be able to use the very things that you have. I remember one time I needed to borrow something from a neighbor, and I went next door, and he was very sick, and I apologized to him. And he says, no, that's all right. I said, well, I need a particular size screw. And he says, well, go to my garage. And he says, on the third shelf, the fourth container over, you'll find that size of screw. Imagine, he had everything organized like that. And I went there, and it was exactly where he said it was. Now, that's maybe taking it pretty far, but that was the way that his mind worked. And so we organize and create our own reality. And wouldn't it be lovely to create a reality where we're only surrounded by joy? This notion that what Mother talked about, you create your own reality, is such a fundamental thing. I remember a friend of mine who happened to have dark skin, black skin, and he was talking about that he had gone into this bar, a very nice place with a friend of his, and there was a group of white women that were over there, and they started looking at him, and obviously they were looking at him and then starting to talk about him. Now, his view of reality was, why do they do this? Why can't I go anywhere and not have people just accept me as I am and see me as a black man and so on? And this is what was going through his mind. So he told his friend about it, and his friend told this tall, athletic, very good-looking man. He says, well, maybe they're just interested in you. And he hadn't considered that. He had been running it through his own vision of reality, that somehow people were against him or somehow malicious towards him because of the color of his skin. And it made me think about it, and because I have white skin, I never ran things through filters like this, but what if I was dark skin? Somebody cut me off on the freeway, somebody, a waitress or a waiter, didn't tend to me right away and ignored me, as they do at times. And what I think, well, are they doing that because of the color of my skin? And this has to become part of your reality. It's a natural defense mechanism. When you feel assaulted by something, you gear up for other assaults in your life. It's just natural. It's what we do as human beings. I had two other friends. They were both very peaceful as adults, but when they were growing up, they were really rough characters, and they oftentimes got into fistfights and had problems that way. And when we were walking down a street, if they saw a small group of fellows who were standing around, and maybe they had a particular look about them, these fellows, and these two guys, they would start to steer wide of them. And because it was part of their thinking that brawls and fights were part of life, and these characters who were standing in a group together just looked like they could represent that kind of threat. So they operated out of that state of consciousness. So it is with each one of us. We have our own view of this world. We create our own reality. And some things we may have that are of help to us. It may be useful to steer wide, clear, and clear of some characters at times. And others we feel are all right. It's not 100%. But it's something that can become ingrained in us. But there are those things that take us away from God, and knowing God and feeling God in all situations and in all people. Now, this does not necessarily make you foolish in life. Jesus said that you are wise as a serpent, but harmless as a dove. You may still recognize where there may be dangerous situations, and you steer wide of them, you steer clear of them, because that just makes common sense. But when that viewpoint and that perspective begins to impinge upon your being able to see God in all people and all situations, then it's too much, because that occlusion creates in you a bifurcation in which you divide the world up, and there is that which is of God and there is that which is not of God. Now, from a human perspective, we would certainly say, yes, there are those things that are uplifting to me. There are those things that make me feel drawn to God. And then there are those other situations and people that definitely make me feel separated and apart. That is the human in us. But there is a higher consciousness. There is a supreme value that we can get in life. And it's more than just a mental attitude. Ultimately, it is a vision that comes to us in life. And we see that everything is made up of God and God stuff, that the very life that runs through us is of God, the thoughts that flow to us are coming directly from God. Now, this is a vision and an experience that comes as a result of paying the price. And the price is going beyond all of those things that have before limited us in our vision. But when we do that, then we have this God experience. And it is not a calculation of the mind. It is an actual experience that comes to us. We see a tree, and we imagine the sap running up through that tree, or maybe through inner vision, we see the sap running up, and we see that it is the life energy of God that is moving through that sap, that the leaves themselves are emitting a kind of energy. Jacques Lucerne, whose book I've referred to before, who was blind from an early age and then ended up in a concentration camp in World War II, he taught himself when he was blinded by accident that he could reach his hand in between limbs of trees and he could feel the vitality and the energy flowing through those limbs. He could also sense when he was approaching an object, and he said the tendency for blind people is try to reach out with the senses. And he cured himself of that tendency, of that habit. You can imagine that if you're walking in a very dark room, a totally dark room, you reach your hands out in an effort to try to keep yourself from running into a wall. You reach out your senses to try to figure out if there's something in front of you that may trip you or be an obstacle to you. He learned to get quiet in himself and become receptive. And through that, he could identify when he was approaching a rock. He could tell you how large that rock was and the shape of it. He made a game out of it. He could feel the life energy that was emanating through everything by not trying to reach out to it, by becoming very still inside and receptive. In the same way, the mind tries to reach out to God. God, what do you want me to do? And we reach out as we would with our hands in a completely darkened room and try to find where the walls are, where's the direction, where does God want us to go? But this will not get us where we want to go. In a very similar kind of way, we need to get quiet and still and receptive inside, not more active with the mind. But it's a difficult thing to do. It's a difficult habit to overcome, to always be reaching out. We need to become quiet. We need to become receptive. And when we do that, then our life can really become changed. Continuing on here with Master, since God is the source of all mental power, peace, and prosperity, do not will and act first, but contact God first. Thus you may harness your will and activity to achieve the highest goals. As you cannot broadcast through a broken microphone, so you cannot send out prayers through a mental microphone that has been disordered by restlessness. By deep calmness, you should repair your mind microphone and increase the receptivity of your intuition. Thus, you will be able to broadcast to him effectively and to receive his answers. After you have repaired your mental radio and are calmly attuned to constructive vibrations, how may you use it to reach God? The right method of meditation is the way. By the power of concentration and meditation, you can direct the inexhaustible power of your mind to accomplish what you desire and to guard every door against failure. All successful men and women devote much time to deep concentration. They are able to dive deeply within their minds and to find the pearls of right solutions for the problems that confront them. If you learn how to withdraw your attention from all objects of distraction and to place them upon one object of concentration, you too will know how to attract at will whatever you need. In the Bhagavad Gita, it uses the example of the turtle. And Krishna says, be like the wise turtle. He has five different aspects of himself that extend out through the shell. and his four legs and his head. And when he wants to, he's able to withdraw all five of those back into the shell and become contained within himself. One time, somebody asked Master whether they could take his picture. And he was in the midst of all kinds of activities, and he said, "Just one moment." "Now," he said, "you can take the picture." And perhaps somebody asked him, "Why did you ask for just a moment?" And he says, "First, I put myself into Nirvikalpa Samadhi." So active as he was, and engaged with all these different people, and somebody wanted to take that picture, he instantly, like the turtle, withdrew everything back inside of himself, drew himself up, and felt himself at the very crown of consciousness, at the top of the head. And then they had the picture taken, and he gave the benefit of being in that high consciousness when somebody took that picture. And you see pictures of him. And what a beautiful God-man. What a beautiful God-man. His eyes so luminous, so deep, so shining. His skin so radiant. Everything about him is absolutely gorgeous. And so it is because he made this habit of being always with God. Now there is a state that is higher than the Nirvikalpa Samadhi, and that is being immersed in that consciousness always, and that there is never a time when you are not with God in that sense. But obviously, at that time, Master had not achieved that highest consciousness. To continue here, before embarking on important undertakings, sit quietly, calm your senses and thoughts, and meditate deeply. You will then be guided by the great creative power of spirit. After that, you should utilize all necessary material means to achieve your goal. The things you need in life are those things that will help you to fulfill your dominant purpose. Things you may want but not need may lead you aside from that purpose. It is only by making everything serve your main objective that success is attained. And if your main objective is achieving joy, achieving happiness, achieving freedom in God, then all the things you have must aid you in achieving that purpose, or once having achieved it, must resonate with that purpose as it manifests in this world. This is a great and effective tool to use before you buy something, or before you take something into your home, or before you decide to keep something and never let it go. Does it aid you in this purpose? If it does, then it is serving the highest and most noble purpose. If it is actually a distraction, then get rid of it immediately, discard it. This may sound harsh. Master noticed once that he was drinking tea, as he did coming from India, but that he is introduced here to coffee. And he noticed that one time he just wanted to make himself a cup of coffee. And perhaps he felt that it was too strong of a draw on him. And so he determined in himself, this is too much. And he immediately eliminated, discarded coffee from anything that he would take from then on. Perhaps he took it socially, I don't know, but he wouldn't make it for himself. We can measure it in all things in this way. Does it distract us from God? Does it take away from God? If it aids us in our primary purpose in life, then good. Then we can continue with that. If it doesn't, and it may challenge us, well, what will I do with my spare time if I don't have this entertainment? What will I concentrate on? What will I focus on? Is there too much time that we can spend chanting? Is there too much time that we can spend in the bliss of God, in the joy of God, in having him reveal deeper and deeper truths to us? Is that the case? If that is the case, then that is the mind, and it is the ego that is telling us not to go further, not to go deeper with God. Success is measured by happiness. Consider whether fulfillment of the goal you have chosen will constitute success. What is success? If you possess health and wealth, but have trouble with everybody, including yourself, yours is not a successful life. Existence becomes futile if you cannot find happiness. Wealth is lost, you have lost a little. When health is lost, you have lost something of more consequence. But when peace of mind is lost, you have lost the highest treasure. When wealth is lost, you have lost a little. When health is lost, you have lost something of more consequence. And when peace of mind is lost, you have lost the highest treasure. Success should therefore be measured by the yardstick of happiness, by your ability to remain in peaceful harmony with cosmic laws. Success is not rightly measured by worldly standards of wealth, prestige, and power. None of these bestow happiness unless they are rightly used. To use them rightly, one must possess wisdom and love for God and man. God does not reward or punish you. He has given you the power to reward or punish yourself by the use or misuse of your own reason and willpower. If you transgress the laws of health, prosperity, and wisdom, you must inevitably suffer from sickness, poverty, and ignorance. However, you should strengthen your mind and refuse to carry the burden of mental and moral weaknesses acquired in past years. Burn them in the fires of your divine resolutions and right activities. By this constructive attitude, you will attain freedom. Happiness depends to some extent upon external conditions, but chiefly upon mental attitudes. In order to be happy, one should have good health, a well-balanced mind, a prosperous life, the right work, a thankful heart, and above all, wisdom or knowledge of God. A strong determination to be happy will help you. Do not wait for your circumstances to change, thinking falsely that in them lies the trouble. Do not make unhappiness a chronic habit, thereby afflicting yourself and your associates. It is blessedness for yourself and others if you are happy. If you possess happiness, you possess everything. To be happy is to be in tune with God. That power to be happy comes through meditation. And I might add to that, meditation, and as Master would say, right living. I want you to consider deeply that we do indeed write our own destiny, that our thoughts govern and control our emotions and our life energy, and that when we direct it all to God, then we will indeed attain the highest happiness. As Lari Mahasya said, seek God now and your future will certainly improve. Now sometimes we face the difficulties of what we have been doing or have done on our way up, but ultimately we can measure our level of realization by the joy, by the bliss, by the happiness, by the light, by the power of God that we have within ourselves. And then let that radiate out to one and all in this world. Let us learn the basic ABCs. Let us go back to those very basic things so that when we drink a cup of tea, we do it with a brand new consciousness. If we are making the bed or driving to work, we're doing it in a brand new way. We feel transformed at the touch of the divine within us. And then you will write the happiest, highest, most noble destiny on your own forehead with your own hand, because you obtained the full and complete realization of God. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy complete holiness
within my heart, mind, and soul.
I feel Your love
radiating through my heart
to all creation,
to all mankind,
to this entire creation.
Fill me with Thy love.
Fill me with Thy light.
Move through me with Thy grace.
That I may ever know Thee.
And become one with Thy great being.
I bow to the great God within you.